Welcome, this is the Sales IQ Podcast. My name is Luigi Prestonenzi, and I'm on a mission to help salespeople be the best sales professionals they can be. Each week, we'll bring you a different message from thought leaders from around the globe, so we can help you master the art of selling. Welcome to another episode of the Sales IQ Podcast. I'm your host, Luigi Prestonenzi, and as always, I'm pumped, honored, and excited that you have joined us for what will be another incredible episode. This week, we're joined by the remarkable George Bronton. He is CEO and co-founder of Membrane. What the hell is Membrane? Membrane is a sales enablement CRM, and George lives in Sweden and has spent the majority of his life building businesses. He's a true entrepreneur. And this episode's going to be insane. We're going to talk a bit about process, systems. We're going to dive into that whole what is sales enablement, because some of you are probably scratching your head going, Mark, I've never heard of this sales enablement. What is this? It keeps coming up. The role sales enablement plays, and also going to talk a bit about, you know, coaching, self-assessment, how can we improve performance through, you know, reflecting on opportunities, and how can we, you know, give others solid coaching and advice. Before we get into today's session though, guys, loving the feedback. So got some awesome comments following Beat the Bots. Anita, she is remarkable. If you haven't listened to that episode, go back to your playlist, hit play, listen to the lovely Anita, because she's brilliant, and we'll probably do some more offline work with her, because I really, really enjoyed talking to her. She's a wealth of knowledge. Guys, jump online, like us, rate us, wherever you're listening to podcasts, because the feedback is amazing. It makes me feel fantastic about, you know, doing what I do, because I love serving you. I only put this together because I love sales. I love everything about sales and customer interaction. And ultimately, I love the listeners that are engaging in our show. So guys, enjoy the episode. Buckle up, because George is going to bring some bangers to the show. Welcome to the show, George.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Oh, fantastic. Hey, before we get into the show and get and talk all things sales enablement, coaching, strategy, process, etc., we'd love to hear your story on how you started your career in sales.
Yeah, good question. I think everyone has been in sales since we were kids, selling our ideas and getting that puppy. And, you know, I was selling repairs for bicycles in my neighborhood, I remember. So I think I've always liked selling.
Yep.
But my career, I guess, started selling. I started selling books. I think that was actually my first and only employment.
Yep.
I sold these For Dummies books.
So yes,
PC
yes.
PC For Dummies and Windows For Dummies. And yeah, that was fun. So I went around Sweden. So I'm based in Sweden, born in Sweden. Went around the country in my car visiting bookstores and selling these books.
Wow.
Interesting learning experience.
Yep. So that was sort of old school door to door, you know, just.
Yeah, definitely. That was canvas visits and everything. So and not a very complicated sales effort, really, but good fun, a lot of traveling and all that. But we had a really good, remember the CEO of that, the Swedish publisher was very interesting, had a special management style. So I learned a lot from him. That was my big takeaway. But I left after they sort of offered me a more of a managerial role in this little team where I would earn less and get more responsibility.
Yeah. That's often the case, isn't it?
So that I turned that down and I started my first company. And I guess that's where it became very apparent that selling was everything. Now, if I didn't sell anything, there was no business at all. Yep. So that business led to another business and led to another business. And now I'm running Membrane, which is a software that helps salespeople be more effective.
Yeah. So just going back a step, I know that you've started a number of companies. What were some of the wins during your career so far up until you started Membrane?
Well, the company that became profitable was a company called Upstream, which had the idea was to find software that were not mainstream. So basically, we were looking for software to sell to IT service providers or IT resellers to make them more efficient, effective, and profitable. So we found software vendors in mostly in the US, but also from New Zealand and Sweden. I learned a lot during that time, and that company still exists and is now run by a very competent CEO. But what I learned there is what got me to start Membrane, and that was the difficulty in building a sales team.
Yes.
We made a major shift in that business from selling through these resellers. So we found products and we taught these resellers on how to resell them to make their customers more efficient. But we shifted that whole model to make these resellers or IT service providers our main customer.
Yeah.
So we brought on new products that were designed to help them become more profitable and more effective. And that was a big, big challenge because those products were really intrusive.
Yes.
Because we could take them from a reactive break fix model where they were selling basically PCs, networks, and hours to selling a managed service, which was fascinating because we could take them from doing like 3% profits to 30% profits.
Wow.
So it was a major shift, but it also required those companies to do a lot of changes.
Yeah.
In how they sold, how they marketed, how they delivered the services. Basically, all their internal processes needed to change, and they needed to invest much more than they had ever invested in technology.
Wow.
So that was a huge shift.
Yeah. So you saw that shift occurring, and then is that essentially what motivated you to start Membrane?
Yeah. So I saw that shift occurring, and what happened was that I started. So I was selling myself, and I brought in my youngest brother, and we were selling these products, solutions effectively. But then I hired salespeople, and I fired salespeople.
Yeah.
And I hired and I fired, and I did that for a while, and until I really had to sit down and say, "Hey, George, what is this?
Yeah.
Are all these people that you've hired and fired really the problem, or is the problem elsewhere?" And that was the big sort of aha moment where I found, "Oh, maybe the problem is me.
Yeah,
maybe I'm the big problem in the equation." And of course, I was. I mean, I didn't give them enough training. I didn't have a process. I didn't have a methodology. I was doing a lot of things very poorly. So I studied everything I could find on sales management, sales process, methodologies, NLP, just behavioral economics, anything that I could come over to try to figure out what I should do better. And that's where I came to some realizations. Firstly, that I had been doing a lot of really bad assumptions.
Yeah.
Like I was assuming that a salesperson who had sold something for someone else could sell what I was trying to sell.
Yeah.
Which was a very bad assumption to make. Which led to me hiring the wrong type of salespeople.
Yeah.
Because this solution we were selling was very complex. So I brought in believing that salespeople, you're born a salesperson.
Mm.
You have certain traits. So if you've sold, you can sell for me. And that was completely wrong. So that was one of the big, big mistakes in hiring. I was hiring the wrong people because I didn't realize the complexity of the solutions we were selling.
Yeah.
And another assumption I was making was that I thought that salespeople, because that's something you have, that's something you get at birth, you would be disciplined and you would go after and just do everything that's needed to reach the target that I had set up for them, which was also false. And then I assumed that CRM systems were designed to help salespeople sell and be better, which wasn't true either, because there's nothing in the CRM system that really help salespeople. They're more like a journaling system, like your doctor, you write your journal. That's how these CRMs were designed. So that all led me to think, okay, how should it be? What should we provide salespeople to onboard them faster and make them more effective and successful? And that all of that led me to start Membrane, because I went to these CRM systems and say, hey, I have this idea. I want to have a system that guides the salespeople through the process and the methodology, and it should embed the training and help them learn on the job. And I had all these ideas in my head, and they're like, that's not really how our system is designed, but you can go buy and plug in so you can customize it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh no, I don't want to do that. So that's how Membrane came to be.
Wow. And was it a bit daunting? You're coming up against, Salesforce and Microsoft and Oracle. Has it been a daunting process competing with them?
Absolutely. I would be lying if I said it's not. And I think there's this perception that you won't get fired for choosing any of those systems.
Yeah.
It's a safe choice.
Yeah.
But if you've been in sales for a while, you can easily identify that they're not really being that helpful, apart from being a central database, which is, of course, helpful in itself. But it's not helpful in driving the right behaviors, which is really what counts and what makes the difference. So when we get into a dialogue, I think people see that there's something more to it than just having the information and the data. There's a lot more to it that is needed. So we can compete with them. We can also add to them, right?
Yes.
We can complement them. So we don't have to kick them out.
Yeah.
So, but it's definitely daunting. And this is what in our marketing, of course, we always struggle with. How can we get people to realize that you have to drive the right behaviors, and in order to do that, you will need maybe a different type of technology than you're used to.
Yeah, and it's a tough conversation to have, because, you look at some of the organizations and, some of the clients I work with, I mean, they've spent upwards of, 10, 20 million on CRM deployments, and to come to a decision of saying, well, we're going to change, our CRM technology because it's not delivering on what we want. It's a big decision to make.
Yeah, especially for the big ones. And
and
we don't really try to get them to change if they've invested that amount of money and they're getting value from it in other parts of the business, maybe. We don't really require them to change, but we deal mostly with mid-sized companies.
Yeah, the mid-market, okay.
Mid-market, so you have maybe 10 to 200 salespeople.
Yeah.
I mean, that's usually where we play. And then it's definitely an option to just change. And I think people have too much fear when it comes to how difficult it can be, because it's not really that difficult if you just take that decision and go do it. It can definitely be quite a smooth ride, but there's a lot of fear there that, oh wow, it was such an undertaking to put this in. Just imagine how horrible it will be to change to something different. But once you do it, it's like, oh my God, why didn't we do this earlier?
Change is hard. Yeah. And as sales professionals, that's the skill, right? It's helping the customer through that change process. It's helping them determine what that future state can look like and how it can benefit. And you just brought up something really interesting, that term value, because I don't think enough, you look at most technology deployments, it's the derived value of a particular, solution isn't always there. And people aren't quantifying it enough to say, are we getting value from this system or piece of technology? So, I think that's an interesting concept when it comes to, what is value? What does value look like? And what should we expect? I don't think some of the companies, when they go through this exercise, actually have a clearly defined roadmap of what success looks like from a value perspective.
I definitely agree with that.
And just want to ask you something. You mentioned earlier about some of the learnings. You know, you were hiring, you were firing. I mean, what were some of your best learnings? Were they the key learnings, the fact that not all salespeople are born and they're not disciplined? I mean, were there any other learnings that you can share with us?
Yeah, I think the one big learning that came from some of the work that a local sales institute is doing here in Sweden called Pro Sales. They've done a lot of work on what makes a sales department successful. And they did a very clean model where they described selling in, and they put selling into three buckets, or I think maybe four now. But basically you have transactional selling, you have complex selling, and you have distributed selling, as they call it, which is basically channels, even more complex.
Yeah.
and they did define that as not just the perceived complexity that you see from the seller's perspective, but what really defines the complexity is the perceived risk for the buyer.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big takeaway, that it's all about the buyer.
Yeah.
And if you're in a transactional environment, then you need a particular type of sales strategy and sales people. It's all about volume. You need to do a lot of calls, for instance.
Yeah.
And part of a complex sales cycle can be transactional as well.
Yes,
like
yes.
If you have SDRs that only go after a meeting, that's a transactional process within the larger process.
Yeah.
But I think that was a big learning, that, okay, not all selling is equal.
Yeah.
If we're in a complex sales environment, then we need a different strategy from the one we would be using in a transactional sale. And I think that also that this world of sales is polarizing.
Yeah.
Because of technology and the internet, the transactional sales we can automate.
Yeah.
We should try to automate it. We should try to get rid of salespeople in that type of business.
Yeah.
And use more technology. But on the other hand, the complex side of things is getting more complex, because
yes.
All products look the same to buyers. If you go to the websites of a particular solution, they all say they do the same thing.
Yeah.
And they all have case studies. So it's becoming very difficult to differentiate. And I think this is why selling is becoming much more important. How you sell is basically your last differentiator.
Yes. Yeah.
So that was one realization.
So, you know, you come to the realization that not all selling is equal. And you've touched on something that I get asked a lot, and a lot of the people that, you know, I talk to and train and coach in the sales world say, you know, they're really anxious about the future. There's a whole heap of data that you see online saying, you know, 80% of sales roles will be automated in the next 5 years, and AI is coming, and or it's here, and it's going to streamline the process. And you just brought, you know, a really important topic up. That there are functions of the sales process that should be automated. Given that you've built a technology, you know, platform that essentially helps the effectiveness of the sales process, what key sort of steps in that sales process do you believe will be automated in the coming years?
That's an interesting question, because I've been kind of, we're focused on the complex B2B sale. So we've sort of shied away from automation. I think automation can do a lot of harm when used wrong. I think in marketing, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But once you get into sales, it can create a lot of damage to relations. And I don't know about you, but I get thousands of emails every week, which obviously are just a part of a cadence that someone has put up in an email automation tool.
Yeah.
And I just get frustrated by that. And I even remember answering one of them, because it was the emails I was getting from this person were very short and almost annoying. Like if I wouldn't do react to his emails, my business would die, basically, was the message in his email. It was really provocative. So I guess it worked for increasing his response rate, but not for the right reasons.
Yes.
And I remember answering him and saying, hey, please remove me from your cadence because your emails are not helpful, not valuable to me. So I was being quite polite. And I remember him answering something like, how could you say that being in a similar business, you must understand the importance of professional cadences and automation.
And
I said, well, yes, if I that can be what valuable if the emails are valuable.
Yeah.
The way you phrased them, I don't find them valuable. And he really got into a big argument with me. So I think we have to be careful how we use technology and automation. But in the complex B2B sale, I think we're going to see AI and automation. I want it to augment what the salesperson is doing.
Yes.
So if we're in a sales cycle or we're initiating a sales cycle, it's going to be very easy to find background information, data, the latest financial report. I want that to just be served up to the salesperson automatically.
Yeah.
That's, I think, it's nice automation, nice AI.
Mm.
But I think sometimes we just go about it wrong. Like I saw this product that was going to automate meeting, the booking of meetings.
Yeah.
And it was AI, and they had a beautiful website. I'm sure they had a lot of VC money backing it up.
Yeah.
But so the idea was that you would send an email to someone asking for a meeting, and when that person responded, there wasn't a person seeing that email. It was just an AI bot being intelligent in responding back with times that would work. And that was so stupid to me, because that's kind of the problem with booking meetings, is that you have these emails going back and forth.
Yeah.
No, I can't do Thursday. How about Tuesday? No, I'm in another time zone. How about this time? Oh, no, then I'm asleep. I can't do that time. And that's just so wasteful. So now they put AI to do a stupid process.
Yeah.
So you try to look at a process.
Yeah, they try to put a band-aid over a process that needs to be changed versus...
Yeah, the process is the problem, right? Yeah. It's much better to have one of these, meeting Calendly or functions like that, where you can go in and pick a time that works.
Yeah.
No more email back and forth. So you have to be smart about how you use it. But I think we're already seeing that in the early early stages of the process, where you're booking meetings and you're getting to that first contact, I think there's a lot of AI and automation that can be used there. And that's valuable. And then throughout the process, I think augmenting the intelligence of the salesperson by serving up content will be very helpful. And I think one of the biggest problems that I see is that salespeople are talking to the wrong people in the account, or just too few people.
Yes.
To get to that consensus that is needed. So I'm hoping to see more intelligence in bringing those stakeholders to a consensus.
Yeah. So if you're a sales executive or a sales professional, and you're anxious a bit about the future, I suppose, after hearing you talk about that, and I love that concept of using AI as a mechanism to draw information. Because I remember when earlier in my career, when we didn't have LinkedIn Sales Navigator, and I had to, you had to buy IBIS World Reports, we did in Australia, and company reports, and then had to spend hours reading through them to try to find the nuggets to connect the opportunity together. So I love what you're saying about augmenting that information. But if for a salesperson, it's a little bit anxious about the future, what should they be doing to make sure they're going to be around in the next 2, 5, 10 years?
Mm. Yeah, I think in a complex sale, if you're in a transactional sale, you better start be nervous and think about how...
It's all right.
How you can get into maybe a role where you won't be automated. But in the complex B2B sale, I think I have a model that I work with when it comes to relationships, if it's a business relationship or customer relationship, or my wife, which is basically trust, align, grow.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how I think. So first we need to create trust. And then we need to align with what we both want. And then we can grow together, grow the relationship, grow the business, whatever we want to grow. So I think the first is to, you have to be a trustworthy person.
Yep.
And nowadays, I think you can do that in different ways. You can write articles on LinkedIn. You should study religiously.
Yeah.
Everything you can, read the books, listen to the audiobooks, and just get better at what you do and what your customers are doing. I mean, you're helping your customers. You should really get under their skin and read books about their business and their industry. So, and once you have that skill set, you should share it with the world. And that's how you become a trustworthy person. And then you always deliver on your promises. And once you've done that a few times, people will start to trust you even more. And then, then it's all about alignment. And I think this is also something that salespeople can be a lot better at, because sometimes there's too much product pushing going on. Like, okay, my role is to sell. Well, is it really? Is your role really to sell, or is it to help someone achieve something by buying something from you?
Yeah.
So I think we need to look at selling as guiding someone to buy, guiding someone to achieve what they want. And if that is aligned with what we have to offer, then it will become successful. If we're not aligned, you may push some product, but it's going to be very short-lived.
Yeah.
So alignment is crucial, and alignment also goes about when you sell to someone today, there will be more stakeholders involved. So how do they get aligned? Yeah. Are they aligned, or are they sitting there and one person wants to go to the left and the other one wants to go to the right? Well, how do you align them? Because if they're not aligned, you're never going to be able to sell anything to them, and they're not going to buy. So I think the alignment piece is really something that you have to give a lot of thought to. How do we best align the customer's needs and wants and pains with what we have to offer?
And
I see a lot of companies today struggling because they've had a few products that they've sold, but now customers, they're not satisfied with that. They need more. So you need to add services. You need to do partnerships with other companies to create a product that is more whole, more holistic than what you may have been offering for the last 5 years. It's not enough. So yeah, I think alignment is super crucial. And then growth, because we need to also see, once we've sold, or once someone has bought from us, will they get to that future outcome that we promised? We need to stay closer to them to see, okay, are they being helped by our product or service? And if not, we need to help them. And then we can grow and find new opportunities to upsell, cross-sell, and all of that. And I think a lot of times we're too eager to find new business, and we spend too little time in actually growing with those accounts that we have spent so much time winning.
Yeah. So you've really summed that up in a fantastic way, you know, and I really like that trust, align, and grow. And that takes me into sort of what I wanted to get an understanding. I mean, I love the concept of sales enablement, and it's been a big topic, I suppose, over the last 2 to 5 years. It's a growing topic. Firstly, what's your definition of sales enablement? Because there seems to be sort of a misunderstanding, let's talk alignment. There seems to be a lack of alignment out in the industry about what sales enablement is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, most definitely. And I think it was Greg Alexander, former SBI, Sales Benchmark Index, has said it's more revenue per salesperson.
Okay.
Everything you do to get more sales.
Okay.
Revenue per salesperson.
Yeah.
Very simple. And then we have the longer, more highbrowed definitions where it's really about everything. You need to train your people. You need to enable them with the right content and tools and coaching in order to increase higher sales effectiveness.
Yeah.
But I think what is maybe more interesting to talk about what it's not.
Yes.
I see a lot. Everyone is trying to use, because sales enablement now is a hot topic.
Yeah.
Everyone is using it for their marketing. So they're saying, we're sales enablement and we are a content platform. So if you just put the right content into the hands of your salespeople, everything will be solved. So then they define sales enablement as content management.
Yeah.
Or another one might be selling a sales video or training tool. Then they push that as sales enablement. So everyone is trying to sort of own sales enablement or make sales enablement to be what their product does or what their service does.
Yeah.
And I think for me, what's important to realize is it's more than that. It's the holistic take on what strategy do we have? How do we convert that into tactics and how do we execute it? How do we train? How do we coach? How do we provide the right tools? So all those things needs to be put together, and that will enable selling, which in turn will enable buying. So we also must remember the buyer in this equation, because it needs to be centered around how we're making the buying experience better for the buyer. So the trust aligned growth thing, for me, is still a core. And then we need to make sure, and this question about sales enablement is also when a lot of times when we talk about it and we write about it, and I'm probably to blame for this as well, we kind of look at it on the widest scope for kind of a big company.
Yeah.
Because then you get into the cross departmental orchestration and lots of other problems that pop up. But in a mid-sized company, it doesn't have to be that complicated.
Yeah.
We can make it easier. But I think the whole sales technology space has also exploded over the last five years. So we have so many point solutions now that are coming out, like send emails faster. Oh, there's a tool for that. this and that, and there's a tool for that. And I think that is also a problem, because salespeople are now, some of them, if you look at high-tech SaaS companies in Silicon Valley, I hear that some of them use like 7 or 8 tools.
Yeah.
And then instead of becoming more effective, you're just becoming overwhelmed. It's like, oh, which tool should I use for this? It's like, oh, maybe this one. Oh, no, that's not good enough. So they spend too much time in their tools.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to cover off with you, George, really keen to talk, you know, about this topic, was I find that, you know, so many businesses they're going to the shiny light, you know, sales enablement and new age of selling. And yes, the digital transformation has occurred, and we've got to be selling on social, et cetera. But I feel that we're forgetting about the most important concept of what makes a world-class sales team. You know, what actually, and you spoke about it, you articulated it well, enable the buyer, right? And we talk about sales enablement, but we're forgetting that there's a buyer that's coming through the process. Given that you've got exposure through your platform to many sales organizations, what does world-class look like from your perspective?
Okay, I'm not sure I quite understood. World-class in what particular?
Yeah, from a sales team. Like if sales enablement is about enabling your sales force to really help that buyer through the process, you know, what do those salespeople look like? You know, what makes a high-performing sales team?
Well, in the complex B2B space where we are focused, first, of course, sometimes we sort of jump over this part because we assume that it's all already in place, but you have to have a strategy.
Yeah.
Right. And that starts with understanding your buyer and how to align with that buyer. But all too often I see people sort of just having or continuing doing whatever strategy they've had.
Yeah.
And then they add a new tool to do what they have been doing just faster. Which is kind of a recipe for disaster. So you have to go back and maybe rethink your strategy and get that alignment with the buyer.
Yeah.
And I think some of the talk about the buyer is 80% through the process, et cetera, I kind of find that a bit BS in the complex B2B space, because oftentimes what they are buying from you, it's not something they buy every day.
Yes.
You don't go out and buy a new CRM every second quarter. So they're no experts usually in buying what you're selling in a complex B2B environment. So you know a lot more about how they should be buying than they do themselves. So yes, of course, they have been out doing their research, but I think the salesperson needs to, or the sales team needs to realize that we are actually quite skilled in helping buyers do the, make the right decision. So I think you have to go back to that that strategy and make sure it's designed to be helpful for the buyer. And that goes back to marketing as well. The marketing content you create should be helpful and interesting, help them think about things. And of course, it always needs to align back to you. If you're just educating them about how to buy from a competitor, then you're doing something wrong.
Yeah,
so the alignment includes you, and it's not just about education, generic education. And then it's about really providing them with more guidance and them being the sales team. So how one of the problems I had in upstream was that my salespeople, even though they were senior salespeople selling something else, they weren't senior in selling what I was selling or what we were selling in, to these customers. So they made a lot of mistakes. They went to the customer, met with the board, had a fantastic meeting. Everyone in the room, of course, wanted to go from 3% profits to 30% profits. So they went. They had took the made the conclusion that okay, now I need to create a proposal for this company. So they went back to the office, created a proposal, and told me that now I'm winning a new deal. And I was okay. Have you talked to their technical people?
Yeah.
And they would say, well, no, I don't think that's necessary.
Yeah.
So okay, why don't you think that's necessary? Well, you know, they're technical people. They will just do what the board says. Yeah, or maybe not, because they might see the board or the company and the CEO deciding to buy an automation platform as a threat to them. Maybe they think they're gonna lose their jobs. So I think they will do anything to prevent this board and this company to buy our solution unless you talk to them in their language and get them to see the benefits of this as well. And of course, they lost those deals when they tried to like circumvent that. So
I think Miller Heiman calls them the anti-sponsor.
In their
strategic selling framework.
Exactly. Yeah. You need to, and that's basics. That's sales 101,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 101, 100%.
But a lot of salespeople still do this. They have happy ears. They want to get the deal. They're on a quota. Yeah. They need to close it this quarter. So they try to take shortcuts.
Yeah.
So what the great sales teams do and the sales managers is they make sure they have a process. Right? They don't allow their salespeople to make these stupid mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's like really simple tactics, right? But I see that those mistakes being made all the time. Everywhere. It's not just small companies, mid-sized, everywhere.
And I love what you're saying here because, and this is where I come back to it, that discipline that you talk about, that process, you know, because for me, what differentiates a salesperson from a sales professional is one who is strategic, who's really thinking about, you know, just because I can smell a sale doesn't necessarily mean it's time for me to propose something.
Exactly.
You know, it's about following the process and identifying who my strategic, you know, advocates or my sponsors or whoever, whatever words we call them. And then also having sort of a risk mitigation plan to say, well, what if there is someone in the business that doesn't want me there? And usually there's at least one, right? Yep. And so I really like the way that you've sort of summed that up for us. And it goes back to that trust, align, grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, for me, that's fantastic. So I really appreciate you sharing that with us, with us, George. And
yeah, I just wanted to recommend a great book about that and a story that I usually tell sales managers and salespeople because there's a tendency to really dislike the word process in selling.
Yeah.
Right. If it's, as soon as you bring up that word, people are like, oh my God, that's so boring. I need my autonomy. I went into this job to have autonomy. Now this idiot is talking about process. So I always talk about a book called The Checklist Manifesto, written by a surgeon. So he's talking about surgeries and has nothing to do at all with selling. But I loved the takeaway from that book because he was tasked, he and his team was tasked to figure out a way to reduce the problems that might occur after a surgery. So a lot of people die every year because of, they didn't know why. They just wanted them to figure out. So they went out and saw that it usually occurs because of simple mistakes. Like, they didn't wash their hands properly. The timing of the anesthesia was off, or, you know, simple mistakes like that. Yeah. So they started looking around, like, how do other professions where lives are at stake, how do they handle this? And they found pilots, and pilots use checklists. And they looked at construction sites, and they used checklists. So they went back to the surgeons and said, hey, I think we have this marvelous idea. We're going to introduce checklists. And these surgeons, like, oh my God, I've been a surgeon for 25 years. I don't need a checklist. And they're like, well, I mean, pilots use it. Would you, don't you feel comfortable when you're entering an airplane and they actually have these checklists to make sure that the plane doesn't crash? Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's probably good. So let's try it out. And they reduced the number of deaths with 47%.
Wow.
Yeah, that was my reaction. That was massive. And I was like, wow, this is so interesting. And then I started thinking, like, okay, so a surgeon is operating on a patient lying still on a table for an hour.
Yeah.
And they're using a checklist to make sure that that patient doesn't die. But in sales, we have a sales cycle of maybe 6 to 12 months in a complex B2B sale. And we think we don't need a checklist.
Yeah.
We just wing it. And that was, I think, so that's always a story I tell to salespeople that are reluctant or anti-process. It's like, well, don't you think it's a smart idea just to make sure that we're not missing important steps that could kill the deal? Just like a patient could die because the doctor forgot to wash his hands properly.
Yeah.
So that usually gets them to lower their guards. I can actually see that. That's a good point.
we'll put the book, the name. What was the name of that book again?
The Checklist Manifesto. Atul Gawande is his name.
We'll actually put that in the show notes so people can find it.
Yeah, it's a good one. And there's also a TED Talk by him.
Okay. Fantastic. In my career, I've moved from, I started in transactional sales, moved into sort of consultative selling, went into the complex B2B sale and then B2C. And I find that we talk about process, checklist, etc. It's required across both B2C and B2B industries. And I know people keep saying, there's no more B2C or B2B, it's business to human. But I still say they are different sales processes. But they both require a process. They both require checklists. And, evidence of that, we're working with a client now and no sales methodology, no checklist, no scorecards to measure performance on an inside sales model. And within 3 months of implementing just some very basic stuff, their conversions have, nearly doubled. And that's clear. It's a clear evidence to say that process and we haven't even got into the point of now, look, embedding so that methodology through coaching. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk about. So we've spoken a lot about strategic stuff now, about getting the strategy and getting alignment, et cetera. We'd love to move more into the tactical discussion about, that coaching conversation, which I feel is one of the most important elements of a sales enablement strategy.
Yeah.
We'd love to get your feedback on what good coaching should look like.
Yeah, I think coaching in general is helping someone succeed.
Yeah.
It can be confused by helping someone or telling someone what to do, which is teaching, right? So teaching and coaching are very different. And then there's mentoring, which is another aspect which I think is also different. But staying at coaching, it's an interesting topic because I see a lot of people talking about the importance of coaching, but then and knowing how to coach, maybe even gone to the coaching classes, but not actually coaching.
Yes,
on a daily basis, and I think that can have a lot of different explanations to why that is. And I wrote a white paper on this topic actually, and I think a big aspect of it is just the mental, the attitude of the manager, right? And why he or she became a manager. I think there's a big mistake companies do when they take their best salesperson and they say, oh, wow, she's so good. She's going to become the sales manager without really understanding or asking that person if she wants to be a sales manager, likes to coach, likes to see other people succeed. Because sometimes, I mean, oftentimes, maybe even a great salesperson has motivation or thrives winning the deal, becoming the hero, and being someone other look up to, or coaching others to succeed might not really be their what motivates them.
Yeah.
And that's something you can grow into. I mean, once you've been a salesperson and you might grow into wanting to coach others and wanting to help others to grow, but it might also never happen. So I think that's one mistake that happens sometimes, that you oftentimes you promote the wrong person, so to speak, or for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. Because that has a flow-on effect, because then when a sales professional or a salesperson doesn't receive value from coaching, then they are conditioned that coaching's no good. And then that creates a bit of a barrier. And that's, I see that a lot is, you know, I talk to sales teams and, you know, I try to, one of the first questions I ask is, talk to me about your operational rhythm. You know, what does it look like? When does coaching occur? When does pipeline reviews occur, et cetera? And it's a bit of an alarm bell when I hear that, oh, we don't do coaching. Then the next level of questioning is to the sales guy or to the sales team or lady, and I ask questions about, you know, why don't, you know, coaching, and their pushback is, well, we don't get any value out of it. I don't want to sit there and evaluate, you know, my sales opportunities with my manager, and because they can't coach. So that when you then try to bring in that coaching methodology or framework, there's already that resistance that you've got to break down first.
Yeah, which is very sad. And I think also just setting the time aside is something that I see people not doing. So they might even want to do coaching, but then they have all these demands on reports and stuff that they should be doing, and they might even have their own number to reach, which is another mistake. But it's kind of frustrating question in the whole coaching thing, because it has so much potential to really get the most out of people when done right.
So if I'm a sales leader listening to this, or a sales manager who's a little bit reluctant to have those coaching conversations because it's not something that we do all the time, what's something that I can do immediately to start that'll build my confidence?
Yeah, oh, wow, I could answer that in so many different ways, but I think I think you need to have some. Now I'm talking from my structured side, my software side here, of course. Yeah. But I think you need to have some structure around how to have these coaching sessions. I mean, you talked about opportunity coaching. That's of course a fairly straightforward one. And you need to. Also, I think you need to prepare and create an atmosphere of, okay, we're on Thursday at 9, we're gonna have a short session. Just talk about your three of your opportunities. You can pick them, and let's just give some thought about what you would like us to discuss, so that they can prepare and think about it ahead of time. And you do the same, and then just go into that meeting and just talk about three of those and ask and not jump. I think one of the mistakes is we often jump into the teaching again. Like, I think you should do this. It's like, no. So creating sort of a structure for it, I think is helpful. But another way would just be to do some corridor coaching. Like you do some studying of the pipeline and you have a few things you would like to maybe know better, and you can ask just a few questions just by over a cup of coffee. I checked out this opportunity. It looks super interesting. Well, can you tell me a bit more about their buying process or their I don't like the word buying process, because that's not really, they rarely have a process for it. But
yeah,
can you talk a bit more about how the decision will be made?
Yep.
And then you can just have a chat about that more informal, and maybe over time get into the more formal. But I think in the end, you need a more formal, structured way about the opportunity management, pipeline management, maybe meeting planning. So you create a few different types of coaching structures and get them into.
Well,
the
maybe there's a good webinar that we could do is around coaching. What makes good coaching, and where to start, etc. Because again, I see that as a real big gap in the industry. Because a lot of sales managers were really good salespeople, and they were promoted into a role of managing others, but they weren't necessarily given the training and the skills, to effectively coach and provide feedback and mentor, So and they get stuck into putting out fires and being reactive and trying to teach. So I'm really passionate on that topic.
Mm. And this sort of goes back to KPIs, I think, as well. When you don't have the KPIs to really track how we're doing over time, and like, is the win rate going up or down?
Yeah.
Is the deal size going up and down? If we don't know the answer to those things, it also becomes very difficult to know what to coach. So I think it's really important to have clearly defined pipeline metrics on different levels, like on the activity level, on the effectiveness level, and on the results level. Usually we're only at the results level. Oh, you didn't hit the target this quarter. Why? And it's like you have to break that down.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that having those KPIs and have it clear. Another problem I see is that people put all kinds of unqualified opportunities into their pipelines, whereas some other salespeople only put them into their pipeline 2 weeks ahead of them closing.
Yeah.
And that is not okay.
Yeah.
Like, you have to have a clear definition, because otherwise you will never be able to compare and benchmark your people against your other salespeople, or one team against another team, or one region against another region, if you don't have a clearly defined KPI frame.
Yeah.
So I think that's very important as well.
Man, there's so much gold there. And I hate it. I'll go into businesses and I see some say, no, I only put an opportunity in if it's over this amount, or if it's at this point of the pipe, the process. And that's crazy. How do you then measure and monitor and know what we can improve, et cetera?
So
you brought it up earlier, but I ask this question of every guest. Salespeople or sales professionals, are they born or made?
Made.
Okay. And why? Is it just it's a trained, you think, or is it something we develop as a skill?
It's definitely a skill.
Yep.
And of course, you can be born with traits that makes it easier for you. But in a complex sale and sales environment, you can definitely train to become become a professional in that. And it helps if you have a certain level of skills or intelligence and all that stuff, but I don't. It's not something, and that's one of the biggest assumptions we make. I think that these people are born, and you have to just go recruit. If you just recruit the right ones, you're done. That's one of the worst when I interview people and they say, "Oh, I have 15 years of sales experience in complex B2B sales," and you start like asking more questions, and you realize that, well, really, this guy has 1 year that he's repeated 15 times.
15 times. Yeah, I love that. Yep.
So
I love that. That's a great picture that we can create of that, because I hear what you're saying there.
Yeah, it's like no continuous learning going on.
Yeah.
Just repeating things.
And we spoke a bit about AI earlier, but is sales a science or an art?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's a science that can be artfully executed.
That's beautiful. That is the best response I've had so far, and I've done about 25 of these. So fantastic! Thank you very much. That's great. and biggest influence in your sales career, and why?
Ooh.
So I know you've got, you know, on the membrane platform, there's a, you know, Mary Lou Tyler with a predictable process. I love that. I mean, I'm a big fan of Mary Lou and I love her books.
Good question. I think from learning perspective, I would say Dave Brock. I love Dave's work. I love Dave's take on things and how he's always thinking, always learning, and always educating.
Okay.
Dave Brock is definitely one of my favorite sales experts.
Okay, I'll have to look him up.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of my last questions, if you were to go back in time and do it all over again, what's one thing you would do differently?
I think I would have stopped winging it
earlier. Okay.
The continuous learning and always educating yourself. I can't stress the importance of that enough. But once you, when I started my first business, you don't find yourself maybe having time for it. So you just run, do things faster and just put out fires. But you have to give yourself time to learn, and time to put that structure in place and build systems, because otherwise it's just firefighting.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, George, I've really enjoyed this. So I've got a page of notes which I'm going to, you know, type up for myself, because I've learned so much. So I really appreciate you sharing where you've come from and what are you doing and what you're passionate about. And I will hit you up for that webinar, because I believe, you know, that would be a great session to talk about coaching and coaching effectiveness. But before we wrap up, where can our listeners find more about you and how can they connect with you?
The easiest way is to go to LinkedIn and search for my name, George Bronten, or go to membrane.com if they're interested in the platform. You can sign up for a demo and I can do it.
Fantastic. And there's a lot of great resources on there. There's some white papers. There's some, you know, some great videos as well. So we'll put all that in the show notes of where they can find you and Membrane, because I've absolutely loved looking at the platform and put out there how they can connect with you. So really appreciate you joining us today. And we look forward to having that webinar with you.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me.
No problems. Oh man, even with that Swedish accent, George brought it. How good was that? He talked about process, he talked about enablement, he talked about, you know, where his passion came from to start businesses from scratch, and he's making a real impact in the world of sales. So my challenge for you this week, guys, is what are you doing to systemize your sales process? What are you doing to enhance your sales process each day that you get up and hustle for that deal? So my challenge is, what are you doing to be the best sales professional you can be?